You meet a lot of bummed out people on the road. The ones who smoke too much, or drank too much, or ran away. The ones who are hanging off the wrong end of a needle. People who've been moving for so long they've forgotten how to stop. They can't stop. Their tension and nervous energy in a litany of names. Kabul, Kashmir, Kathmandu. I was there. Listen to me, I was there. And you learn to avoid these people. You have to avoid these people because their madness, their self-obsession will just wear you out, grind you down. Because you're on your own. Because you're a long way from home. Because you've got to look after yourself. So you learn to sniff it out in them, you learn to slip away from them. And after a little, you can do it without thinking. So when it's 9 o'clock in the morning, and the young guy in the beach hut next to mine is doing serious damage to his second very business-like spliff of the day, my hackles instinctively rise. But hell, he's from England too, and it's beautiful here under the coconut palms, and we start talking. Now he's well-bred, this guy, aristocracy, taking a little break here on the island from his farm out in New Zealand. Oh right, I think. Another fled our bitter nation hen coop home. But no, he says, it's not quite like that. And he smokes, and he tells me this story. He was an investigative journalist, he says. Connections to the sort of people you and I had never seen. Working with another guy, a household name. And this story comes their way that the SAS, our heroes, are training the Khmer Rouge. That's Pol Pot, the killing fields. And they check it out, research it, make it known. Now that's what I call good work, I say. Says, but it annoyed some powerful people. Don't know if, given a chance, I'd do it again. First, there were the phone calls, then the death threats. He hasn't got the cover of his more famous colleague, he hacks it for as long as he can, then his nerve goes, he leaves. New Zealand's about as far away as you can get. And I remember how the whole time I talked with him, his hands shook, his face was tight with fear, he always had a spliff. And I wished him well. I was leaving the island, I was off somewhere new, and I knew that what I was saying was never enough. But I wished him well. I wished him well. Now 12 months later, and I'm back in Leeds. A band shooting a video, I meet a friend I haven't seen in years, since when, it transpires, we've both been to Thailand. Half jokingly, I mention this guy, the journalist, the man with the spliff. Good story, ain't it, eh? Oh, no, says my friend. It's all true. And, didn't you know? He's dead. Had a heart attack. Or so the story goes. And suddenly, the hall I'm in is very small. The world is very lonely. Now, maybe you believe this, and maybe you don't. And maybe, like me, it just scares the living fucking daylights out of you. But I write this for the man I met, the man with the spliff, the man whose fear went with him halfway round the world. I write it to keep his memory alive. It's the only way I know to mark the goodness in him. Lest we forget.